From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Поэтому я сегодня перед этим залом самых красивых, продвинутых, патриотичных людей хочу обратиться к народу Литвы.
That was the president of Belarus, Alexander Lukashenko, Thursday, as he announced the closure of his country's borders with Lithuania and Poland.
Польши и Украины, остановите своих безумных политиков. Не дайте развязаться войне.
Lukashenko said that the country's army was forced to close the border with the two countries and to strengthen border security with Ukraine. Last month, he expressed concern about what he called, quote, a serious movement of NATO troops in the immediate vicinity of our borders, closed quote. In his speech Thursday, he said that recent protest activity in Belarus was being coordinated from abroad, citing in particular Poland, Lithuania, Ukraine, and the Czech Republic. Belarus shares borders with all but the Czech Republic. The situation there was the topic of discussion at Thursday's weekly press conference in Moscow with the spokesperson for Russia's foreign ministry, Maria Zakharova, and we bring you that in its entirety.
I will say a few words about the situation in Belarus. We are taking into account what's going on in the country. We have heard the statements made by opposition. We follow the protests and rallies that take place in support of the acting authorities. The Russian position on the situation in Belarus hasn't changed. It was reaffirmed by President Putin in Sochi on September 14th. And I need to say again, that Alexander Lukashenko is a legitimately elected president, and President Putin congratulated him again on his victory in elections. We respect the choice made by the fraternal people of Belarus. It refers to those who voted for Lukashenko and those who voted for other candidates. We advocate for peaceful settlement of the situation without any help or external pressure. We support the initiative of the incumbent president of Belarus to carry out constitutional reform, and we know that activities have begun in that area. We are also implementing arrangements that were reached in Sochi. It includes providing state credit to Belarus of $1.5 billion. Belarus will be the first country that will receive the Russian coronavirus vaccine. We will address the issue of the supplies of Russian energy products and we have invigorated the activities to restore traffic between our countries. Intergovernmental commissions and industry started their work. And we are preparing the regular forum of Russian and Belarusian regions that will take place in Minsk in the end of September that will bring together regional leaders of the two countries. In this difficult moment, Russia will continue to provide its assistance to the government and people of Belarus. Now the situation in Syria. Despite the key role played by the Russian military in Syria, the situation there is far from being stable. The terrorist organizations Hayat Tahrir al-Sham that has evolved from al-Nusra and Huras ad-Din, it's al-Qaeda affiliated group located in Syria. These two groups have entrenched in Idlib. Their activities are contained by Turkish military present in Idlib and by the patrols of Russian and Turkish military in M4 highway between Serakib and Jisr al-Shughur. Unfortunately, Ankara delays its implementation of the Russia-Turkey memorandum signed on March 5th. We are continuing the elimination of remaining IS bands, and they regularly remind about themselves on both sides of the Euphrates River. They take full advantage of the presence of U.S. Military base in Attanf, as well as the presence of the zone of oil interests of Washington in lands of Arab tribes in the eastern bank of the Euphrates River. The U.S. supported self-proclaimed administration in north east of Syria, where local Kurds play a key role, have fluctuations that might lead to dangerous consequences for the unity of Syria. On the one hand, its leadership categorically denies any accusations of separatism. On the other hand, they play dangerous games with Americans. They sign fake contracts allowing pillaging of hydrocarbons in the region. So when Syrians need these resources to restore their fuel energy complex on the vast territory of Syria that is controlled by legitimate forces, there is a strengthening trend for normalization. Authorities take measures to overcome the consequences of the armed conflict. However, they don't have enough potential because of the fact that the territorial integrity of the country is breached. The Syrian Arab Republic is dealing with devastating consequences of unilateral sanctions, and I need to say that American restrictions, particularly the CSAR Act, go far beyond the national jurisdiction of the United States. They create barriers for the international trade. Politically, these measures delay the Syrian settlement process, a political process, and also they obstruct the activities of the Constitutional Committee in Geneva, and in humanitarian aspect, they provide additional suffering to the people of Syria. The Russian visit paid to Damascus on September 7th by the Russian delegation led by Deputy Prime Minister Borisov and Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov focused on the bilateral coordination in order to achieve a political solution in Syria and to restore its national unity and to overcome the consequences caused by the armed conflict. Russia is ready, in line with the UN Security Council Resolution 2254, to provide every assistance to the people of Syria and to do everything to build a new Syria for all of the people of Syria. And another topic that is it reminds us the history. It's not a contemporary issue, but it's the stories that gives us a lot of lessons.
I would like to make a new comment on the deaths of civilians following bombings in Iraq in 2015 carried out by the Netherlands. In our view, this matter is as relevant as ever, since we are talking about bombings of civilian sites. Previously, the Russian Foreign Ministry had given its evaluation of the actions of the Dutch military in Hawija in June 2015, when airstrikes killed over 70 civilians. As it turns out, the Netherlands were involved in another tragic incident in September 2015. The F-16 jets of the Royal Dutch Air Force bombed two houses in Mosul, mistaking them for an ISIS command point. It was revealed by the Dutch lawyer, and she is currently supporting the people of Hawija in their legal wrangle with the Dutch authorities. There was also another citizen of Iraq involved in the legal procedures. Following all of these long court claims and counterclaims, the Netherlands admitted their fault and agreed to pay a compensation of 1 million euro. But the aforementioned citizen of Iraq never received the compensation. That is why a lawyer had to be appointed. The issue with the airstrikes in Hawija and Mosul demonstrates the unwillingness and reluctance of the Dutch government to assume responsibility for the civilian victims, in spite of the undeniable facts of the use of armed force and their actions amounting to war crimes. At the same time, the Dutch allow themselves to brazenly accuse Russia and the so-called Assad regime of inhumanity, brutality and deliberate destruction of civilian sites in Syria. This is seen as another attempt to manipulate public opinion and the display of double standards. I would also like to make a comment on the statement of the EU High Representative on Foreign Affairs and Security, Mr. Borrell, concerning introducing the sanctions mechanism named after Navalny. These statements were made during the plenary session of the European Union. They were talking about introducing new sanction mechanisms and giving it the name after Navalny. We see this as undermining the basic principles of international law and the principles of the UN Charter. This is a continuation of illegitimate sanctions carried out by the EU and the United States. Any discussions about naming these sanctions mechanisms are seen as an unhidden attempt of giving the new EU restrictions new anti-Russian sentiment and nature, while at the same time our proposals to Berlin to conduct a joint investigation of the incident continue to be ignored under made-up pretexts. The nature of the statements made in Brussels makes one think that our Western partners do not wish to find out the truth, while their action goals are to support the information campaign unleashed in the European Union in order to ensure that the European destructive course against Russia becomes irreversible. We still hope that common sense will prevail in the EU and our partners would turn their back to their current practice of appointing the blame on someone else and only using the confirmed facts in the future. Another statement that also requires our comment is the calls of the Danish Prime Minister to start a new discussion on the construction of Nord Stream 2. This is also another attempt of the Danish authorities to block the construction of Nord Stream 2. This initiative, as I said, is hard to understand. Currently, the pipeline is in the final stages of construction. Over 90% has been constructed, and the Nord Stream AG application has been confirmed, saying that it will go through the anchor stability zone in the territorial waters of Denmark. But the new authorities of the countries saying that they could not recall the agreement. That means that all the necessary authorization from the Danish government have already been received. We are talking about unfair competition, and Washington is aggressively trying to market this expensive LNG to the damage of European companies and consumers, while Denmark, using various kinds of political disguise, is trying to lobby the American plans. Such unconstructive policy of Copenhagen could negatively affect the overall atmosphere of Russian-Danish relations. We have also taken note, and our media have also taken note of the message of the prosecution of Poland, saying that they have filed a request to arrest the Russian air traffic controllers who are working in Smolensk on the 10th of April 2010. Over 10 years ago. They were working there during the crash of the aircraft of the Polish president. For several years, Poland has been unraveling the version of a conspiracy to organize the aircraft crash, trying to accuse Russia of what had happened. But back in 2011, the investigation had established, as stated in the report of the International Aviation committee that it was an accident, and Poland agreed with that. Due to the low visibility, the Polish pilots, despite the warnings of the air traffic control, decided to land in the airport of Smolensk, which resulted in a crash. And now, years later, Warsaw, ignoring the facts, leading the situation to absurdity, is trying to gain political points and use this tragedy to accuse Russia of it. It is no surprise that Poland continues its anti-Russian actions. On numerous occasions, this only means they are pushing someone's anti-Russian agenda. We call our Polish partners to cease this farce and stop prosecuting and persecuting the Russian air traffic control. Any attempts of Warsaw to arrest them are futile, since in accordance with the Russian constitution, we do not have the right to send out our citizens to be arrested abroad. I suggest one simple thing: to take a look at the website of the International Aviation Committee and read the transcript of the talks between the pilots and the air traffic control. This is hard to read, but still you need to read it to understand what had really happened. And on the 18th of September, the Republic of Chile will mark its 210th anniversary of its independence. The people of Chile had a complicated path towards their independence, and they have gained the right to determine their own destiny. We have good working relations with the Republic of Chile based on equality, mutual respect, and pragmatism. We are comprehensively developing our political dialogue, and we welcome such development. It is noticeable at the platforms of the United Nations and APEC. We have good relations in the areas of trade, economy, and congratulations to the country's authorities. South Ossetia has taken a difficult path in establishing its statehood. An important landmark event was the decision of Russia on the 26th of August 2008 to recognize its independence, which was followed on the 9th of September by the establishment of diplomatic relations. And then, 12 years ago, it was followed by the Treaty on Friendship, Cooperation and Mutual Assistance, as well as the Treaty on Alliance and Integration signed on the 18th of March 2015, the Republic has established itself as a sovereign state with great success in establishing its statehood, economy and social spheres, which is illustrated by the free expression of the will of the citizens of South Ossetia on the elections of various levels in accordance with the democratic voting procedures. Its GDP has almost doubled in the last 6 years. With the active assistance of the Russian Federation, numerous infrastructural sites have been restored and constructed, including those destroyed during the Georgian aggression. Dozens of social infrastructure sites were constructed. In spite of the coronavirus restrictions, we are comprehensively implementing the investment program to promote social and economic development of South Ossetia. Our country actively contributes to strengthening the political positions of South Ossetia, expanding its international links. We believe that apart from Russia, Abkhazia, Nicaragua, Venezuela and our Tuvalu and Syria, who had recognized the country's independence, there should be more countries who could take an impartial approach on the political reality and recognize the independence as well. And another important day, on the 22nd of September, the Republic of Mali will celebrate its 60th Independence Day. Due to the recent coup d'etat in the country, it's facing a complicated period in its history. We hope too that Mali will re-establish its civil government based on inclusive national dialogue. Following a short transition period, they will organize democratic elections with the assistance of the ECOWAS and the African Union. The people of Mali enjoys good relations of friendship and cooperation with Russia. They have a rich historical past, unique traditions and customs. The colonial expansions in Mali started in the second half of the 19th century by France. the French were forcing the local population to serve in the army, imposed exorbitant taxes, which provoked armed insurrections among the population. And then, in 1946, the future first presidents of Mali and Côte d'Ivoire founded the Sudanese Union Party, which became the leader of the anti-colonial movement. Following anti-colonial struggle in 1960, Mali claimed its independence and adopted socialist movement and policies. Supported by the Soviet Union, Mali implemented numerous infrastructural projects, constructed a cement plant, as well as Kalana gold mine, constructed an airport, a hospital, a number of universities, and as well as mineral, geological surveying and exploration, development of new arable land. Thousands of Soviet teachers and doctors worked in Mali, and besides, over 10,000 Mali citizens received education in the Soviet Union and Russia, and we hope that our relations will continue developing in the interests of both states. We would like to congratulate the people of Mali and wish them success in reaching national reconciliation and to restore the country. I wish you peace and prosperity. And also, we had several questions, in particular from the Zvezda TV channel. Question is as follows. The UN Secretary General called Russia and the United States to find an agreement on the extension of the New START Treaty, which expires in February 2021. They suggest extending it by 5 years. Is there any progress in this matter or any contacts with the Americans on this context? And what are the conditions that Russia will accept to extend the treaty, keeping in mind the moratorium on the intermediate-range missiles in Europe and the non-participation of China? That was the question from Zvezda TV channel. My answer is that our officials have stated our position on numerous occasions. For a long time, we have been maintaining contacts with the U.S. side, and we support the extension of the New START treaty. At the end of last year, the United States passed an official proposal to consider this issue in the shortest term possible. We are ready to extend the New START Treaty as it was signed, to extend it by the intended 5 years without any preliminary conditions. Therefore, the ball is now on the U.S. side. Unfortunately, we have to say that the U.S. is trying to link the New START Treaty extension with other unrelevant or irrelevant issues. This does not add to the optimism concerning the treaty. Another question from ANPAM Information Agency, a rather lengthy question, I would say. I will not read the complete question, but it revolves around the intentions of the de facto authorities of Nagorno-Karabakh to settle the Karabakh-controlled territories with the citizens who have left it. The entire question can be read in the transcript of the briefing. I would like to make a following comment and answer this question. First of all, we have heard of the intentions of the Nagorno-Karabakh authority to settle the Armenian citizens on the controlled territories, or rather to settle the Armenians who had left Lebanon. We do not currently have the information on the numbers of Armenians who fled Lebanon and who would like to settle the territory of Nagorno-Karabakh. We believe that this issue should be decided within the established negotiation process. The OSCE Minsk Group hosted consultations on the 14th of September involving the foreign ministers of Azerbaijan and Armenia and passed on the proposals to mediate the further steps to settle the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict, including the organization of separate meetings of the Troika with each of the ministers, and we hope for a positive reaction of the sides. Moving on to the next question, the Pakistani TV channel has sent the following question. The foreign minister of Pakistan had a meeting with the Russian foreign minister Sergei Lavrov on the sidelines of the SCO conference last week. What are the chances of the promotion of bilateral relations? What are the current agreements between Russia and Pakistan on bilateral cooperation on Kashmir situation? During the briefing on the 13th of August, we had given a detailed comment concerning the current state of relations between Russia and Pakistan. Those estimations are still relevant, but certain events have taken place ever since. On the 10th of September, on the sidelines of the ministerial session of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, a meeting took place between Sergei Lavrov and his Pakistani counterpart. This was the second meeting in the last 2 years. The previous meeting had taken place in December 2018 in Moscow. The sides once again discussed the prospects of Russia-Pakistani cooperation, in particular cooperation in political, economic and tourism sectors. They have reached an agreement to continue working on a number of issues of our relations and to advance them to a new level and to take all the efforts to implement the North-South gas pipeline from Karachi to the south of the country. The ministers also discussed the situation in Afghanistan. In this context, I would like to note that the coordinated partnership and cooperation of the key players, including Russia and Pakistan, allowed us to launch on the 12th of September of direct inter-Afghani talks in Doha. Now, a question from Open TV. A few questions, in fact, related with the visit of Sergei Lavrov to Cyprus. Following the Russian foreign minister, as the question says, Mike Pompeo visited Cyprus and demanded seizing the visits of Russian military vessels to the ports of Cyprus, which they believe are related to money laundering schemes between Russia and Cyprus. And the question is how we could comment on this. I believe this question should be addressed to those who make such claims. First of all, the US had better not get involved in our relations with Cyprus. We have always been saying that no cooperation with any given country is aimed against a third country, and we would suggest that Washington adhere to the same principles. And the same question from Open TV, saying that the Greek media say that the borders will be open to a certain number of visitors from Russia. This transition period has almost expired without any answer from the Russian officials. And Russia remains silent due to the overall Russian position on the EU borders restrictions. Or does this relate to the relations between Athens and Moscow? I will answer this in the following way. I cannot say that the relations between Moscow and Athens are at a low level. This is definitely not the case. Overall, we are currently elaborating the relevant measures, keeping in mind the changing epidemiological situation that had been mentioned in the beginning of the briefing. Unfortunately, the situation is not getting better.
Another question from RIA Novosti. How would you comment the information posted by mass media that the Russian citizen crossed the Estonian border illegally, and he was supported by the Consul General of Estonia? So we're talking about the Russian businessman, and I can tell you that according to the Russian citizen who has given an interview to Radio Svoboda, he actually left Russia in spring, and he received help from Estonian diplomats to cross the border, and Estonia received our questions to provide explanations for the matter. So thank you very much, and I'll see you next time. Take care and have a nice day.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.